We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyberfusion USA.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show's Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. And you know what? Dave's going to be really excited about a big update about some ventures that I'm doing with streaming radio. I don't know how much I can promote because I'm on all these other stations as well. But as program director of VIP Internet Radio, things are going to become really big. A great conversation I had. Not as big as last night with Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? You really had a blast on the red carpet last night, didn't you?
Neil, thank you so much for the opportunity. It was one of the best nights of my life. I met all these celebrities. I learned so much about cancer research. Man, if I ever get cancer, I'm going to that place because that doctor is cutting edge technology, doesn't just do what everyone else is doing, you know, chemo and radiation, none of that stuff. He is awesome, and you are awesome for making it possible. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And it's just
they raised $12 million they raised.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And it's just a tremendous thing, and that's what's so great about what I try to do on radio is try to do things like this. And we have our guest we talked to before, but now, Dave, it kind of really brings the celebrity guest brings a little bit of a kind of a new feel because of her book. And what makes me excited about that is because you've written a book. I've promoted lots of people writing books, and it's exactly what celebrity fans want to read about celebrities, especially this. So I'm excited to welcome the program Lulu Roman, author of This Is My Story,
Lulu, congratulations
This Is My Song, and Notes
Thank
for
you.
Monica from Hee Haw. We're celebrating that 50th anniversary and your book. What a perfect timing for your book to come out, right, Lulu?
Oh, right, yeah.
Lulu, you're doing the right thing. You got to be an author to gain celebrity status, and you got to go on TV and radio, and you got to speak at prestigious stages, and I think you're doing it all. Good for you.
Thank you.
Awesome.
So tell us, why did you write the book? Are we ready for the questions yet, Neil?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Why did you write the book? Tell us about it, what the name of it is.
Just had so many requests, you know.
This is your first, right?
Yep.
Well, good for you. You did it instead of just talking about doing it.
I did, yeah.
So, Lulu,
what's the title?
The title is This Is My Story, This Is My Song.
Oh, that is a famous gospel hymn. I love it.
Sure is.
I love it. Is this like your story, the story of your life, your testimony, what God has done for you?
It is. It is. The very beginning, from when I was born.
Give us the short synopsis, you know? the back cover
version. That's something. Okay. I was born in a home for unwed mothers.
Oh, my.
Dropped off in an orphan's home shortly after that. Spent my entire childhood in an orphan's home. When I graduated, you kind of got put out. So I jumped out into the world with a kind of a bad attitude.
Oh, yes.
Yes, so.
And managed to get myself in a lot of trouble. Went to jail twice for
possession
of dangerous drugs.
Are you kidding?
Listen, y'all, I was crazy. I was a hippie kid. I was not into country music. I knew nothing about country music.
Oh, my gosh.
Was this the 60s or the 70s?
Lulu, one of my clients dealt with that, too. You know, the hard times, the difficulties, the challenges. God is what got you through all this, right, Lulu? Especially in your childhood when you're talking about...
That's right.
And
absolutely, yes.
How did you find God? And is that, I'm sure that's in the book.
It is in the book. The whole story's in the book. I ran into one of those kids that I grew up with in that orphan's home. And we kind of started palling around with each other, you know. And she was the one who was instrumental in taking me to a church where I met the most gifted man of God I'd ever met in my life.
Who was that?
And his name was Howard Knatzer. And he was in Dallas, Texas, at Beverly Hills Baptist Church. And ended up giving my heart to Jesus on my knees in his office.
Oh.
And, boy, wow. My life was changed instantly. I was instantly delivered from drugs. I did not know it until the next day when I realized that I had not had any drugs since the day before.
Did you feel anything that moment that he came in, heat, shaking, anything like that? Manifestation?
I don't know that I could say heat or shaking. I was very excited, and I jumped to my feet. And
like electricity?
Yes, kind of like that, yeah.
Oh, wow. Mount Lulu.
Which was pretty good for me because I wasn't much on jumping then. I was over 300 pounds.
Now, oh, my gosh. And Lulu, I remember you talking about the weight loss last time we chatted. So let's talk about a little bit about Lulu when you talked about this transformation. Once you got your act together and got God on your side, how do those challenges continue? I'm sure you were tempted a lot after that. So you made that transformation, but I'm sure we all deal with those temptations after that, right, Lulu? Especially when you
I was instantly delivered from drugs and never had a desire to do it again. You know, I didn't.
Wow.
God just took it away.
That's a true healing.
It is. It was absolutely a miracle. It was. For my life, it was.
Well, this may sound like a stupid or dumb question, but what do you hope to get your readers to get out of this book? Besides telling your story.
There's so much. There is. I want people to find hope. I want people to find help. I want people to understand what forgiveness is.
That's a big one.
And what, you know, what love is.
Yes.
And what acceptance is.
Wow.
Powerful things.
Life-changing things.
Yeah, it's all, it was all pretty heavy duty in my life. Because I was the underdog. I was the one that no one wanted to fool with. I was the one that everybody made fun of.
Yeah.
And in order to keep myself from continuously wanting to commit suicide, I just found out I could get high enough to get away from the ugliness of reality. And the reality was that I was the fatty, fatty 2x4, can't get through the kitchen door, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
Which how old were you when
here lately that if I'd been as smart back then as I am now, I would have said, obviously, I did.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 23 years old.
That's a good age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what happened afterwards?
Everything.
Everything. Did you start getting breaks immediately, or did it take a while, you know, to just kind of wait and be patient and trials and tribulations?
People,
how did it go for
when
you?
When people found out that I got saved, they were calling immediately. And I had people calling and wanting me to come and give my testimony.
Oh, wow.
Really?
And I had to ask my friend, what is a testimony?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And she had to explain to me what the whole thing was.
So,
and that was before I ever started to sing, too.
So this before,
In school, I sang in the concert choir, you know, but I never sang before that.
So
you had a voice. Did you sang before? Go ahead, Neil.
No, I was going to talk about Lulu when you God. how, that feeling you had. So how much you knew God had a plan for you after you went off drugs and you had this focus, right? God's plan was definitely there for you. And did you just kind of just know your journey where to go then?
I didn't really know because I didn't have an understanding of what would be expected of me.
Mm.
So it was an entirely new adventure, shall we say. Pretty scary at first.
Yeah.
You know, because the idea that people wanted me to stand up and talk, it wasn't so much that scared me. It was the idea that all those people generally that looked at me and made fun of me were going to be, shall we say, you know, judging me when I stood up. And that was pretty scary at first. It was. But I found out something really precious. The love of Jesus exceeds any kind of stuff like that. It does.
Mm.
If you have people who truly love the Lord, they don't care what you look like.
Amen.
You know? As long as you're clean, you know. But looks don't matter. It's that spirit. It's that the need of the kind of hooking up of spirits, you know, and
that,
getting
that must
to
have been really good news for you.
Yeah, it was, because I had people I could talk to. I had people I could listen to. And it made such a difference in my world. It did.
It definitely seems like it makes a difference, Lulu, and it's something that you believe in, you know, you want, and it drives you. And when did you know that you had that singing ability? When did the kind of that light bulb come on for you that, hey, I'm pretty good at what I do in singing?
People asked me if I sang, and I said no. And then the hee-haw, see the little bug right there?
Mm-hmm.
Got a little beetle bug or something, see him crawling on the back finger. people asked me if I would come and sing, and I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
I sang as a kid in the choir, you know, but I was never much at singing. But what happened was I had started to sing a little bit at church. And one day, a lady by the name of Catherine Kuhlman called and asked if I would come and be on her program. And I said, no, thank you. And she called back in a couple of weeks and asked me if I'd come again. And I said, no, thank you. And this went on for about a month or so. And finally, someone called and said, Miss Kuhlman just wants to know why you won't come and be on her program. And I said, because I ain't falling down for nobody, you know.
Uh-huh.
I knew she
now, why was she calling you? How did she hear about you? You weren't famous or anything at that point, right?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I'd been on Hee Haw.
Oh, this is after Hee Haw.
Yeah.
What year was Hee
Haw? I didn't get saved until I had been at Hee Haw for, oh, let's see, about 5 years or so.
So you were a celebrity at that point, and then people wanted to make you more famous by bringing them on their stages, and you were like, no, thank you.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
So when did that change? When did you start in your head, you know, reversing all of that negative stuff and self-image stuff and rewriting your subconscious?
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Yeah, but I guess when I begin to see the acceptance from people,
yes,
and there were no requirements for that acceptance, that's what got my attention.
Wow.
Is that people just seemed to love me, and it shook me pretty bad at first because I thought, can I just get out of here? It made me feel real uncomfortable.
Yeah, waiting for them to turn on you, probably.
Uh-huh.
How did Hee Haw happen? You skipped over that.
Oh, well, I had worked in the Dallas nightclubs for several years.
Doing what?
And working in those places, we met entertainers. And I happened to meet Buck Owens. And Buck fell in love with my best friend. And they kind of fell in love with each
Buck
other for a minute.
Buck falls in love with a lot of people.
Yes. And so we just got to be good friends. I mean, Buck and I had such a great camaraderie with each other.
Yeah.
We really did. And so when the Hee Haw thing came around, he called me one night and said, now just sit down, shut up, listen to me. You know, you think he knew me? And I said, well, all right. And he said, there's a couple old boys in California going to do this show. It's going to be kind of a country and western type laugh-in. And he said, they're going to call it Hee Haw. And I said, he what? And he said, Hee Haw. And I said, he what? And he said, Hee Haw, Lou, like a donkey. And I said, oh, okay. So he explained to me that they want, first of all, he said, they want you to come up here and be the Goldie Hawn character. And I said, aren't you talking to the wrong person?
You know, said, you mean the dumb girl?
They want you to be the funny girl, you know. And I said, well, you know, present that in a different way, okay?
Now, you weren't singing at that point, right? No singing.
No, I wasn't. Mm-mm. I wasn't. Uh-uh. So ended up, they flew me to Hollywood and took me to CBS television studios and sitting up. Well, first of all, they couldn't find anything to put on me. Everybody ran around, you know, kind of flapping their face going, what are we going to do? And
so,
finally somebody
you were the Mama Cass type of a character.
Yes, I was. And they found a dress that Jonathan Winters used to wear.
Oh my
that's
goodness.
What I ended up in.
Hilarious. So what was your character on Hee Haw? What did they tell you to do?
Just be silly, you know. I've always been a cut up, you know. I always got in trouble when I was a kid don't you buck those eyes at me. Because I've always, you know, I guess made funny faces and used my eyes, you know. And yeah. I got in a lot of trouble for that, I did. But
well, you were a great addition to the show.
Thank you.
You helped
so
make the show what it is.
Thank you. I hope so.
Now,
it's been very good to me. I tell, if you turned on your television show and you watched Hee Haw. You gave me my life, and I'm very grateful for that.
Gave it back to us. Thank you.
So Lulu.
Thank you.
So Lulu, when you talked about, you know, that process going on stage, did you feel like you were a natural with this character?
At first, I was a little apprehensive. But I kind of slid into it pretty easy.
You're right, with Hee Haw and that process and being on stage, Lulu. Now, when I think about, you know, being on stage and you felt that natural tendency to feel like it just was there for you, it just came so natural. And did you have that performance practice before that? Any, like, did you perform on stage as a kid and all that?
Not much. I did, you know, I was in school plays, and in my junior and senior year, I was in the operettas, you know, and I felt pretty, you know, it was not hard for me. It was pretty easy for me to get up there and, you know, do what I needed to do, and I was always louder than anybody else, so they didn't have a problem with that, you know. So I'll have to say, with the good Lord's help, it came pretty easy to me to be, you know, the silly girl.
Absolutely, Dave. How would you like to respond about the silly girl?
Well, I just wanted to respond to what she said. I've never heard you sing, Lulu. Are you a soprano? I mean, what style of voice and what kind of music do you sing? I assume you sing gospel.
I do sing gospel, but I also sing rhythm and blues and country, and I sing all kinds of stuff.
And so what famous person do you kind of sound like, so I can get an idea of what kind of genre?
I don't know that I sound like anybody else, you know?
You sound like Lulu.
I do.
Okay, well, that's awesome. So hold on a second here. So you're on a book tour, I understand.
Uh-huh, we sure are. Yeah.
So what do? You travel in the country? You're doing everything?
Uh-huh, yep.
What kind of places are you speaking
at?
Are you singing during your book tour? Tell me everything.
Sometimes there's a concert thrown in there, you know. And then sometimes it's just a bookstore or, you know, some place where they have a book thing, you know, that will be just exclusively for women.
Do you see people in the audience crying as you tell your story?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Have you ever had an opportunity to, like, do an altar call right there?
I do almost every time I stand up.
Oh, my gosh. Good for
you.
But
I am not.
Shy.
Tell you this. I am not one who will give an altar call.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't feel like that was what I was called to. I was called to stand up and tell my story, but not so much to, when you give an altar call, you've got to be responsible for what you tell each and every person that comes up. And I've generally been up there standing for at least an hour. And if you're going to talk to somebody individually 15 or 20 minutes, that's going to be harder to do. That's going to keep the people there longer, you know. So I feel like maybe that's, you know, for them to do in their home, church.
But you've certainly given them something to think about. You've planted some seeds, and maybe
they'll come by the table afterwards, and I'll talk to people briefly.
Oh, great. Awesome. You're changing lives, Lula. Good for you.
Thank you. Not me.
Yeah,
it's,
I know.
God.
Only
it's,
when we get to heaven will we see all the lives that we've changed.
No,
that's
but,
true.
But Lulu, you're giving credit to God, and you know that without God, where would you be if you would have kept staying on drugs, Lulu?
I'd have been dead so long ago. I would have.
That sounds like a good song title.
Yep.
Where would I be without God?
So yep. Lulu, are you going any other places for your book tour that our listeners, are you finished up with it, or you have more places you're going to be going to?
Oh, no, we're going to be doing the whole this year and next year, too.
And are you doing, like, outside of this country? Because Hee Haw is worldwide, isn't it?
We have not been scheduled outside of the country yet.
But they know about you. Really outside of the country, don't they? Don't they know about
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. I believe so.
Well, you better get ready. Maybe next year that's where you're going.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love that.
Well, I'll tell you, if it's successful here in this country, buy your ticket because that's probably where you're going.
Yeah.
When are we going to see Hee Haw on Amazon or Netflix or something like that? Mm. I think it's the next journey step for you guys. You said you have a lot of the shows on YouTube. I remember when I interviewed all of you guys together, or it was back-to-back-to-back last time I had when we were celebrating the 50th anniversary. Why hasn't that gone on a streaming site yet? Is it because you guys
are on a, as a matter of fact, we're have just started a little tour. I say it's a little tour. It's going all through next year called Hee Haw Live. And we have done, how many of them have we done, Kim? Five or six? Yeah, we've done five already. And it's Misty and Buck Trent, me, Jenna Jay.
Yep.
And then we've got a couple other kids, you know, that work with us in a band. And we've done about five shows. It's been great. We've had wonderful, wonderful houses, you know.
So these are like the anniversary tours that all you guys go on. That I just went up in Bakersfield a few months ago with who was I with, Neil? What's her name?
I forget. But the anniversary tours, yeah. So you've been about how many? So you're different places. So there's a website, isn't there, Lulu? Also, that people can check that out.
There
right?
is. Mm-hmm. You can go to luluromanbook.com. to get the book. Now, if you want to see the schedule, you got to go to luluroman.com.
Mm.
Or is it Lulu Roman Music? luluroman.com. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was Jenna Jay I was thinking of.
So you're...
Oh, Jenna, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's on this thing that we do together, yes.
Yeah, we interviewed her as well. She was a great guest.
Yeah, we ended up, Dave, just to remember, because Dave's now getting... we interviewed every one of you before Lulu. We really enjoyed it, and that's why I try to kind of stick to more book questions this time than Hee Haw questions, and kind of really focusing on you more than Hee Haw. And again, but you owe everything to Hee Haw. But what would you like to say to your fans right now, Lulu?
Oh, I love you.
Why don't you do one of your bits for us?
Thank you.
Lulu, go ahead and do one of your bits for us.
Say that again?
One of your bits.
Do one of your routines.
Bit routines. A quick one, if I put you on the spot, from Hee Haw.
Well, that's a problem because most of them involve all the others, too.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Well,
we have these little skits that we do, you know, or these little things, you know. I mean, I can run out and tell a little short story or something, you know. Or
Yeah, do that.
Or, yeah, tell us.
Give your fans a little taste of Lulu.
Yeah, give us a taste of Lulu. Go ahead.
And I do for a little taste of it, honey.
Little taste. So that they want more.
Okay, I sing this every, you know, for every show, okay?
Okay.
I had six kids, and you had 11. We had 10 more, and they're blooming like flowers. I wish you'd come home, you dirty old rascal, because your kids and my kids are beating up ours. Where, oh, where are you tonight? Why did you leave me here all alone? I searched the world over and I thought I'd found true love. You met another and you was gone.
I love that song.
Oh, Lulu, that's fantastic. You now will go, the certain people that I've had sing on my show, you'll live again in that type of singing things. The Wiggles to, I've lost track of all the different people who have sung on my show that have I put on the spot, but I appreciate that. And I mentioned you to the Wiggles, but other people as well, for sure. But I greatly appreciate you coming on. Again, Dave already asked a caregiver question before, but Dave, everyone could check out caregiverdave.com if they are a caregiver or have anything to do with caregiving. And thank you again, Dave, for being a great sponsor and a great co-host. And Lulu, we love your story. This inspiring story, story of faith, and everyone needs to check it out. And I appreciate you coming on, Lulu.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
And thank you, Lulu, for having the courage and the boldness to do this, because you're going against the current political climate, you know, and I just commend you, and you're earning a lot of crowns
thank
in heaven
you.
for going against the current. Thank you.
Thank you so much. But they don't bother me.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot, Lulu, for calling.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Blessings.
Blessings to you, too. That was the Neil Haley bye-bye. Show's Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. Take care. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley's Caregiver Dave Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome the program, Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? Tonight, you're gonna hit the red carpet representing me. I never thought of this in a dream in 10 years, that the Neil Haley Show, Neil Haley Network, would be in L.A. To do this. Again, always I've been in studio or I go to these events. But now, Dave, you and I have worked together so long, now you're just going to be a correspondent. Are you excited tonight, Dave?
I'm very excited. And you don't say in L.A., Neil. You say in Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Because it's all about Hollywood.
So
some of the past guests, as you know, are some big names. I gave you the list. Jane Fonda. I can't even think of them all right now. Tony Bennett. James Corden. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And so I'm going to be ready. I'm going to be in my tux, got my microphone and my microphone flag representing you and your logo. I'm ready to rock and roll. Got my photographer filming all of this, part of our documentary that he's doing for my life. It's awesome. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome, Dave. And it's funny, I do have probably a hookup with the Oscars, and we're going to have to look at the connection. But our guest today probably has more hookups than we know. He's in Spain. I have a story about Spain where I did this marathon interviews where I decided to be part of this 24/7 live thing where I had Dee Wallace and a bunch of other celebrities on at 4 a.m. in Spain. So go ahead and introduce our guest. So I have a kind of a Spain connection today, another connection today. It's all good. It's just a crazy, crazy world. And go ahead and introduce our guest.
Well, I have very limited information on him, but we're talking about J.D. Shapiro, and he's an author. He wrote a book, Think Like a Man, the only guide you'll ever need, and talks about empowering women. So, J.D., welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on it.
Please introduce yourself for the part that I should have said but did not have in front of me. Tell us your accolade.
I guess I'll brag a little. After short of college, I wrote the first movie I wrote was Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Oh, yeah, that's the big one.
Mel Brooks. But I also wrote the worst movie ever made in the history of films called Battlefield Earth, starring John Travolta. There's a movie called We Married Margot, which was an independent movie I directed that won a lot of big awards, including the HBO Comedy Festival Award. And then there's a lot of other movies I've written that no one cares about.
Are you telling me Travolta was in a film that bombed?
Hard to believe.
And his career went on despite it. Well, tell us about yourself. Who are you and how did you grow up? Let's start from the very beginning.
The very beginning, I believe I was conceived on a couch, but I'm not 100% sure. That couch is infamous somewhere. I grew up very poor, and my mom lived in North Jersey, my dad in Hell's Kitchen, so I was back and forth between the two, depending on if I was bad or good, and I was bad a lot, so I was at my dad's a lot. And I grew up with three sisters and my mom, so for better or worse, they helped form who I am. My mom tells a story when I was a kid, I did two things, which makes sense. I would undress my sister's baby Barbie dolls to see what was underneath, and I would take apart pens to see how they worked. So I
did that
right.
Too. Oh my God!
Did you really?
I like you already. Yeah.
I sure as heck didn't do that, JJ. JD, I will not. I didn't do that, JD. Okay, go ahead.
Yep. Well,
you're the first person that copped to doing it. I'm sure a lot of guys did, you know. Go ahead.
No, I was going to make a terrible joke. I was going to say, if you think you were conceived on the couch, God, is your father Harvey Weinstein? Oh, did I really say that out loud, Neil? I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's a good joke. Come on now. I mean, the Men in Tights jokes were
He's
unbelievable.
Fair game right yeah. now. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and Barbie dolls are being conceived on a couch. There's no real lines in humor, by the way. I that's one of the issues I have with today's generation is all these safe spaces and stuff like that. And it's like, humor's supposed to shake things up. If I don't shake things up, or you guys don't shake things up, then nothing's being said and nothing's changing.
Yeah. Amen. That's awesome.
No, I agree completely.
So did you always want to write, and what inspired you to write and direct? How did that come about?
I actually started out as an actor. I was lucky enough to study with the great Uta Hagen at HB Studios, where she yelled at me a lot, but apparently that was a good thing. It meant she thought it was good. But then I got more interested in what on behind the scenes, first in plays, and then I would PA in movies and commercials and stuff. And so I got more interested in that because, you know, I wanted to be God, and I get to control everything as a director. And so everything was geared towards a director. And my whole life, my mom said she knew I'd be a writer, but I never did because I'm dyslexic. But eventually, that was the path I took. And everyone forgave my tremendous amount of spelling mistakes in my script. Apparently, that was somewhat legendary in Hollywood. Like, okay, Jake's going to submit a script and it's going to be filled with terrible spelling. Even though I'd have three people check the spelling, there was no way they could catch it.
You're a funny guy.
Thank you.
It's a stand up.
Go ahead,
Neil. You got a question?
Yeah, I got a question. I'm ready to go. You guys are just really hitting it off. By the way, Dave Schoetz post, you guys were both ladies' men. I know it. I just know it from both your backgrounds and everything. I look at Dave when I saw good old Dave back in the 70s with the when he had hair. I know he was a ladies' man. And I know you were too. So that's what the difference is. I was busy trying to beat people up and play basketball and be an athlete while you guys were all pulling women. But let me go, JD, in that into kind of a follow-up question. The follow-up question is, when you said you wanted to be a writer and you wanted to be in part of all this different stuff, the kind of process to think about writing stories and writing, especially for movies, how different is it than writing a book?
Very different, because a book you can do anything with. There's no real structure to a book other than I went to a seminar when I was in college, and it was Logan's and Babu Mandel, and they said the only job of the writer is not to bore the audience. So I think that's the same with book and a screenplay. But with a screenplay, you're very structured. You know, it's got to be 110 pages. I mean, you can get away with more in description, but the acts are, you know, you need the first, second, third. I actually think there's 10 acts in a movie. The three-act structure was from plays. But you have to hit certain notes. Where in a book, you can go off and you can talk about the characters in more depth, and you can create bigger stories. But mainly in a book, for me, it's more about the characters that you can really get into and really get in depth with. Where in a movie, you have to be very concise to explain a character. Like, one of my favorite movies, as an example, is Midnight Run, when he says, "I'm going to effing kill you with a pencil." I'm going to stab you to death with a pencil. That is such brilliant writing, because in that line, you summed up that character right there.
That's a great
I'm going to stab you to death with a pencil. Not a knife, with a pencil. So that's in a film, you really have to be much quicker. So that the audience, it's just a different thing. In a book, you're reading alone at home. In a movie, for the best part, is you're seeing it with an audience. Obviously now with Netflix and everything else, that's changed a bit. But it's just a very different medium to write in. And I had to get my head around that when I wrote my first book, which was by mistake anyway. I wasn't planning to write a book. I was just writing in my journal what I thought I wanted in a woman. And then I realized I had a book, and I started to show it to some friends, and they felt the same way. So that's how they came to be. But I had to be much more structured in the screenplay. If a book, I can go off on tangents like I am now.
Yeah, everybody's looking for that next famous line that gets quoted in infamy, like, "Make my day," or "I'll be back."
Yeah, and you never know. I mean, you know, I've spoken to filmmakers who have made. And you never really know what's gonna catch on. You know, is hasta la vista? Who thinks that's gonna catch on? And of course it did.
And sometimes it's not even the line; it's how the line is said.
So you,
I think you actually, that's a key point. I would say all the time it's how the line is said, because someone can say a line one way and you're like, it doesn't have any effect on you, but someone says, "Here's looking at you, kid," and it comes from Bogart, and you go, "Oh. Nice."
Or, "I'll be back." You got to say it that way, you know.
No, I think
very simple. Princess Leia says to Harrison, you know, Princess Leia says, "I love you," and he says, "I know."
That's only going to work. That's only going to work if you're somebody like him. Now, when you brought up the whole thing, I get so cool about this whole Travolta thing. Here's the reason why. I watched Staying Alive for the first time ever, maybe a year ago, 2 years ago. You're laughing at me. I'm 46, by the way.
Yeah.
So I missed it.
You're a little slow,
so at the time working with John Travolta, that when you wrote that, how was he easy to work with? Was he a challenge? What would you say, JD?
John was one of the people who I've worked with many stars, and he was a pleasure to work with. He was a great guy. He really gave me, you know, he had certain views on how he wanted to see the movie, and I had mine, and we would talk about it and might clash it out. But he was a pleasure to work with. He was a gentleman. Whenever we go out to eat, which is a lot, he would never let me pay, no matter how much I tried. But then one time I sneaked it because when I walked in, I slipped the maitre d' my credit card, so John didn't have it. And he was mad about it in a nice way. And he's a Jersey guy, so we hit it off gate. Just a great, just a super gentleman, and a pleasure to work with. Same with Stan. I should have mentioned that I worked with Stan Lee from 2002 to 2000, right before Joni, his wife, passed away, 2016, on projects. And Stan was the same way, just a terrific person to work with.
Wow. Well, let me ask you, if you could tell your younger writer self, director, anything, what would it be? You go back in time in the time machine.
I would tell me not to become a writer. I would beg me anything else.
You're killing me here. Why is that? I mean, you're kidding, obviously, right?
No, I'm actually not. You know, like, I read all these quotes now. I'm much better read now than I was when I was a kid. Again, well, because of Audible. And that's why I actually got into comic books, because there were pictures of Kurt Vonnegut Jr. was my first favorite author, because he had doodles in his book. So I saw visuals. But truthfully, I think Hemingway was the one that said writing is easy. All you do is sit at the typewriter and bleed. So it's a lot of times it's a tough, it's lonely, it's there's a lot of demons that come out when you write, especially when you're writing something, and you should, that's very personal. But no, I really would. I would have said become a surfer or anything.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
Stitcher.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future. The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Go pump gas.
Yeah, pump gas. That's a good one. I own a gas station.
And something easy, something where it's not so demanding on your mind, and, you know, in a business that is very, you know, looks very nice from the outside, but there's a lot of warts on the inside. Mm. And, you know, no matter what your career is, it's going to be very up, it's going to be very down. It's going to be very challenging. And don't get me wrong, there's amazing experiences that I've had, and I've got to, you know, hang out and talk with terrific people who we challenge each other when we speak. Dabney Coleman and I used to hang out a lot, and he was tough, but he was great. We had these great debates, him and I, and Nicholson was there every once in a while, and Harry Dean Stanton, who would hang out, and Sean Penn. So it was like, you know, there was interesting people in the entertainment world and in politics and stuff. And as a poor, I mean, I literally grew up very poor, to have access to that world where I got to meet fascinating people was terrific. And I should say, not just the stars. I wrote a project called Blast Off, and I got to go to NASA and see a shuttle launch, and it was amazing. I got to speak to the thing. questions. I didn't get to speak to the astronauts in San Rodin quarantine, but I got to speak to so many people. Neil Armstrong was there. Buzz Aldrin was there. I mean, but even just the daily, day-to-day technicians were so fascinating to talk to, and the security forces there. So it's I got to go to the – I mean, this sounds corny, but I got to go behind the scenes to a post office because I wrote a movie that was like Die Hard in a post office, and to see the inner workings and to speak to everyone. I think I became a writer not knowing it, but I would get these worlds to open up for me where I could gain some type of knowledge. And I enjoyed learning. So that
was
that's the reason.
So JD, when I
was ever told you sound like Woody Allen?
I was gonna
your say. Voice. I think I'm listening to Woody Allen here.
I've gotten Woody Allen a little bit, although I'm nasal right now. The one I get the most is Joe Pesci.
That's
that would work too.
Okay. So JD,
I'm literally with my girlfriend and watching in the living room, like flipping through channels, and my cousin Vinny's on, and she's in the bedroom and yelling, What did you say? And I'm like, that's not me, honey, that's Pesci.
Now with JD's experiences, you got to experience many amazing things. You said, you know, not giving the don't become a writer, but how much have you used that in your other ventures of as an entrepreneur? Because I mean, creating, writing, producing, you do all of it, JD, in certain aspects. It helps because of what your experience, Men in Tights, working with Travolta, working with Stan Lee, that opens up doors, doesn't it? That's the one thing that people have to understand is the more experiences we have with interesting people, the more we can get other opportunities to talk to the right people with our current projects, right?
That is a really great question, and I hadn't thought about it, but you're absolutely right. The writing, the fact that I wrote and have directed, not just the fact that I've done it, but also the experiences that I've had, because you're in control of an army when you're directing. I mean, it's – and all different types of people, you know, from the movie star to the Teamster truck driver, and you have to handle all of it. So, yeah, that opened up doors to me when it comes to businesses that I've put money into or helped out with. I actually got a call from Homeland Security, or a lot of filmmakers – or a bunch got a call from Homeland Security after September 11th to ask what would we do if we were planning an attack? Because I wanted to go outside the box. One of my big things is, unfortunately, I've had too many people in my life pass away from cancer recently. So I want to start a group that is trying to fight cancer, but I don't want it just to be cancer specialists. I want artists. I want an architect. I want doctors in different fields. I want a little kid, because what I've learned as a writer is people, when they're not put in a box, or they don't put themselves in a box, and that's what we normally do, and why movies like Shawshank Redemption are so popular, because we put ourselves in our own jails. But when we get out of that box, we expand ourselves so much that we can come up with things we never thought we could, and we can make a big and better difference in the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great point.
Absolutely. And see, and
great question, great answer.
Dave, that's the thing that is amazing that I think I keep trying to tell you. Doing this celebrity show, you can name drop the heck out of this, and with what you've been able to accomplish working with me, of people you just know you can pick up the phone with after having an interview. And that's the thing that I use to open up doors and opportunities is, hey, you know, talk to celebrities, you learn things, but you also learn how, hey, you might know somebody, I might know somebody. The media can be a very great opportunity, Dave, and that's the thing that working together, we continue to learn. Go ahead, next question, Dave. I know you have some great questions
that's
for JD.
That's what I'm learning.
Yeah, go ahead with JD.
So your first produced movie, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, how did that come to be?
So I needed to go to a dentist, and my sister recommended this guy, Evan Chandler, and I said, he sounds like a movie star, Evan Chandler. Anyway, I went to him, he saw on my chart that I was new in town, wanted to be a writer, he wanted to be in the movie business, so he and his wife invited me out to dinner, and he said one of his clients was a guy named Emil. He went through his clients, and one was a guy named Emil Buis, and Emil had worked for Mel Brooks many years ago, in the 70s, I think, or 80s. Anyway, I was so naive. I'm like, oh, great, good. I can write a script and Emil can give it to Mel. And luckily, I wrote the script. I wrote the spec script in 2 weeks. Evan corrected my spelling. Then I got it, made some changes, got it to Emil. Emil loved it, gave it to Mel. And then I got a phone call saying, Mel, that was on Sunday. Monday, I got a call saying he wants to meet you on Wednesday. And the rest was history.
Wow.
Through your dentist.
And I thought that's how we my dentist, yeah. I remember everyone who knew me in L.A., which wasn't a lot of people, but people who had been in L.A. for a while, and I started to make friends with them, were like, he's crazy. He thinks his dentist
is true.
And they're like,
it's all about networking, ladies and gentlemen. It's all about networking. And when you have a brand, you can use that brand to open up other doors. Or if you know people who know people, the biggest things can happen, JD. And so with Men in Tights, Mel, I got the opportunity to interview Mel because of Mel's son. I made good friends with Mel's son, and I pushed it, and finally got the opportunity. And it was an unbelievable opportunity to get to interview Mel. But I found out he's a really down-to-earth guy, isn't Mel Brooks, in your opinion, JD, in a lot of ways.
I mean, you know, what was funny was once Mel wanted to go to, they have the jousting, I forget what it is, a restaurant where they have jousting and they have sword fighting, like from the days of when. And so here's Mel and I. And they're passing out paper crowns, and Mel puts one on. He's like, come on, put one on. Come on, I put mine on. I'm like, okay, fine. Well, here I am, and you can see people are turning around going, is that Mel Brooks, you know, sitting there with a paper king crown while he's muffin steak? I mean, so, yeah, he definitely has his eccentricities, but he was also down to earth. And Max is terrific. I mean, a terrific writer on his own, obviously, his son. Who I met a few times when I was doing Men in Tights. And, of course, his wife was great. Anne Bancroft was fantastic. I loved Anne. Anne was just amazing. She comes in one time, and they're offering her to do the movie. They want to do the movie Driving Miss Daisy into a TV series, and they'll only do it if Anne will do it. And so Randy Auerbach, who never quite got the credit she did because she handled Brooks films, The Other Side, so movies like Francis and 84 Jones, and My Favorite Year. Anyway, she says, CA just called and they want you to play Drive, you know, in Driving Miss Daisy in the TV series. And Anne went, TV, darling, I became an actor so I don't have to work. Kevin, no.
Well.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And that.
Here's the guy, you know, and they wasn't like, no, don't eat that, it's bad for your heart. Don't eat that, it's bad for your liver. Don't eat that, it's bad for your kidney. I'm like, basically, you're offering me water and rocks, and I don't know if it's because you care about my health. It's cheap. And Mel was known for being cheap. He was.
Well. Neil, you got a question?
Yeah, I got 1,000 questions for him, and I know that Dave's mind is going 1,000 miles a minute today for a lot of things. But no, so let's talk about when you finally said, I'm writing this. Did you think it was going to be a success, Men in Tights? Did you think it was going to be so funny and an iconic, another one of Mel Brooks' iconic movies?
You have to go in. It's almost like being a surgeon. You have to go in with tons of confidence because you're fighting your demons that are telling you, you don't know what you're doing. You've got a 20-page script. I always feel like I have a 60-page script and that's it. So you have to pump yourself up like Ali would do before a fight or a lot of football players do. So I'd have to pump myself up and convince myself that, yes, this was going to be a really good, funny movie, and it was going to get made. I don't know if most people realize this. I didn't at the time, but less than 5% of the projects that are bought, scripts, books, plays, whatever, by studios, are turned into movies. You know, over 95% languish. Now, it's changed a little bit now because the studio system is different, but it's still probably less than 10% as far as studios go. Less than 3% of independent movies ever see the light of day. So the odds are very difficult, except luckily I really didn't know that. If I knew what I knew now then, I wonder if I would have written it. I think I would have, but, you know, the odds were so against me just to even get it from Mel, to get him interested, to want him to do it. And then the studio came to me at one point after the movie. They said, you have no idea how close this movie made. Came to not being made because Mel had a couple of bombs prior to it and they weren't sure, but luckily they really loved the script and they said, okay, they felt it was, you know, foul proof, and so the movie got made. But yeah,
well, you were a breath of fresh air. You came from a dentist. Of course they had to try it. Something different.
Exactly. I had bright white teeth, and I smelled good.
Now, what the heck are you doing in Spain? I told you my story. It was some world record they were trying to set in Spain where they were going to broadcast for. It was this huge time. And guess what? They got so tired, they could speak some English. They forgot the English by the time I did the three nights of different celebrities. It was kind of embarrassing at the end. But why Spain? Why are you in Spain, JD? What's going on?
Well, I came to visit, and then I just fell in love.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.